Hello, all you beautiful people, and welcome back to another episode of Podcast Assemble, the show where you come for your rambling, geeky download. My name's Tommy, and I am delighted, as always, to be joined by my friend and co-host from across the pond. It's our resident spice addict of the pod, DL. How are you, mate?
I'm good, man.
I'm good.
Spice. It's super spicy.
It's the spice. It's Christopher Walken. He needs the spice. It started already.
Yeah, he could use some spice. He was seeing him.
Pep him up a little
bit. Seemed a bit dry.
He said
in this movie.
It seemed like the desert.
You need to crisp him up.
Like the desert missed the rain. I don't know why I'm doing Christopher Walken today, but here we are. How are you, mate?
I'm good, man. Psychoactive as fuck. What's going on?
Are you seeing the future at this point of all the spice?
I do see the future. I know what we will do
in this episode. Will talk about Dune 2, yeah, 2024.
And we will extrapolate on Dune Part 3.
At some point, you're going to have to do the voice on me and make me do something that I'm not intending to do this episode. Do it. Do it.
That's basically what they stole the voice from, right?
Pretty much. Do it.
How are you, bud?
Man, I'm very good. What have you been up to? What's been happening?
Oh, you know, lots of... I'm living that fun employment life.
Oof.
Yeah.
Fun employment. We haven't talked about this.
Yeah, right now I'm just enjoying French lessons. I'm studying French. I'm reading.
I'm not jealous.
I am going to gym every day. I'm stretching. You know when you're like... All the things you're like, fuck, if I had 5 more minutes.
You're like peak humanity, right?
Dude, I'm like flossing and shit. Like every day floss, every day stretch, every day French, every day gym. And then whatever I can do after, which is generally a bit of reading, a bit of writing, a bit of wedding planning.
Where are you up to in the Red Sun novellas?
Red Rising, you mean?
Yeah, whatever.
Fucking cuck.
They're all the same. They're all the same. Nice.
They are not. Dude, I am at...
Okay, I don't care. Let's move on.
Good joke. But I'm going to power through this one. I'm 75% done, I think.
Oh, wow.
Dark Ages, the fifth book.
And there's a sixth book
There's a sixth one already out, then a sixth one part two. A little part two.
They're like Dune part two. The thing we're talking about today.
And dude, this is like the most excited I've been about a series since Game of Thrones. And one of the more like horror element, like one of the big twists that just happened, and I won't say much, is like the coolest shit since like, I don't know if you ever played Halo 1, for all our listeners that did.
I know of it.
That mission in the jungle where you discover the Flood.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know of this.
Creepy as hell. This is like, he's done a whole pivot where every time I think this guy's like, okay, he's like a one-trick pony, his chops have increased and he's like switching tones and it's all horror right now and it's beautiful.
Fun employment really suits you.
It's beautiful.
You're more energetic than I've ever seen you on a podcast.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's fantastic.
Second line sales leadership's a bitch. It's just a big meat factory and in the worst way. Like the processed meat factory.
Oh, great.
Not the kind where you're just like, you know, getting free range meat.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Free range organic meat. Anyway,
that's all I eat, man.
So I've been doing a lot of guns. How about you? Have some big news.
I did have some big news this weekend. Yes.
Are you sharing with the
and it's
the
not
world?
You asking me to be your bridesmaid.
No.
Unfortunately, I mean
you are the flower girl.
I am the flower girl at your wedding. Me and my partner got engaged. I know. It's one of those weird things. Like life kind of happens around you, I got to the point where I was like, I don't know why I've not done this yet.
Yeah, like, well, that is,
why haven't I done this yet?
Every man comes to that, you know, situation, that crossroads. And when they make the jump, that's
And God bless her. Yeah. She was very patient with me. I am the slowest human of all time. Yes. Like, I'm slower than the worms in this movie. I just take my time. We just patter around.
Aren't the worms fast, though?
I mean,
they just look like they're going slow. So maybe it's just an optical illusion.
For a worm, for like the size of the planet, they're probably pretty slow.
I was going to say, like for a worm, they're fucking fast.
Yeah, they do look pretty
fast. Worms are usually pretty slow.
We're going to talk about this a lot. Yeah. There's a few bits I want to talk about the worms.
But like, so while you were getting married.
I was getting engaged.
You were getting engaged.
Too soon. Yeah, too soon, y'all. It's going to be one of those long engagements. You know where it lasts 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, totally. My best 2.5, so that's got to beat that.
A tenth of what I just said.
Yeah. Well, you always do it big, man. Well,
yeah, that's it.
That's it. Congrats.
Well, you were jacking off in a bathroom.
Yeah, well, I was getting my sperm tested, which, by the way, the boys can swim. While you were doing that, I was getting pretty intimate with...
For anyone who's new to the podcast, we're not normally this either personal in my perspective on this intimate on your perspective.
I had to match your energy. I mean, this is a big news, dude.
My boys can swim. I'm happy for
you. Dense, high viscosity, lots of number, and they can swim.
So you guys are going to start trying?
No, we're not going to try.
Oh, but you
so this is like checking. The just to make sure that like
pre-preemptive.
We don't like, you know, if we make a big decision to not do it for a bit, we're not like out of the way. Like, we can still do it.
Yeah,
and
right.
The results came back like, yeah, you probably can.
It's like Keanu Reeves like learning gun fu to be like, I don't know, John Wick. You want to learn the skills first before you sort of move into the actual filming of the thing.
I feel like it'd be more like if Keanu Reeves wanted to become like
this
an
is
assassin.
A film podcast, but film and TV podcast, by the way.
Yeah, it's more like if like Keanu Reeves was like trying to become an assassin, but before he did that, he needed to make sure like he didn't get like, you know, he didn't have a high risk for muscle cramps or something.
Justin needs to trigger finger.
Yes. So you gotta do your groundwork, right?
You
if they couldn't swim, then like, you know, I'd have to deal with that. I'd have to think about whether
if you got cramps too soon, yeah. I mean, in your hand, that'd be the worst.
It already happens.
Guys, look, if you don't want to listen to us banter about weeks, feel free to stick around. It doesn't normally get this weird or this personal. This is us after a week and a bit of not seeing each other properly, having a great old catch-up as this podcast is known to be about, checking on each other's mental health as we like to do. But if you want to, there will be time codes in the description. Please feel free to jump around. Our main topic is going to be a doozy. I'm so excited to talk to you about it. We only started yesterday.
I am too.
Gonna be epic.
It's gonna be awesome. But you didn't really ask me about my mental health. You just asked me about my sperm. Just
no, you just told me about it. How would you try to?
We have this
move
on
away
the
table conversation.
You asked about the sperm.
Well, let me ask you a
ask
question.
Ask me about
then.
My mental health next let, time. Jesus Christ, Thomas.
Let me ask you about a question then. Yes. If you were to give this podcast one big dune worm out of, or up to five big dune worms, how many dune worms would you give this podcast?
I would give it 5 dune worms.
5 stars. Please, ladies and gentlemen, we'd love it if you give us a 5-star review. It really helps podcast algorithms, stuff we don't really understand. It would be really helpful, and we really appreciate you for doing that. Yes. What have you been up to, DL? What's been happening in our geeky spheres?
Watched the ending of 1923. So that's,
ooh,
you know,
that's the TV show.
Oh, sorry,
right?
1883.
That's also a TV show.
They're all both TV shows. They're both prequels.
They are both numbers.
To Yellowstone, and they're okay. Both numbers. And it's good. It's a good one.
I feel like as with any of go. Those shows or movies where it's just like a number, at least preface it with, give me anything.
It's
like,
a Western. I'm telling you. It's
2012 like, could be anything.
Well, it's a Western.
It's 2012 is not.
It's a Western set like right when everyone was crossing the Oregon Trail.
Of course.
So like people, you know,
did we play
the
32-bit video game where you course, have to yeah. do the Oregon Trail? God, that was dull.
Who didn't?
I always just died of dysentery halfway
Everyone
through
does.
For no reason.
Yeah, that's the point. you don't get it.
Nobody wins.
But I didn't actually do much like geeky stuff other than reading that book and watching some Westerns, which I tend to do. I also watched The Alamo.
Ooh.
Which is not that great of a Western, but I'm down to a spare few.
Okay.
I've seen almost all of them. So I had to like kind of dig into the war chest there. And
what about
some
new Westerns? Actually, let's come back to it.
There's not that many good ones out.
I'm intrigued to know a bit more about The Alamo. Talk to me about The Alamo. Is it worth watching?
Oh, look, it's got our boy from Aquaman.
Oh, J-Mo?
It's got, who's J-Mo? It's got Patrick Wilson from Aquaman.
Is he as buff as he's in Aquaman? Because he is.
No. Well, okay. I don't know. It's like it's ragtag cowboy gear, so it's not really flattering to the shred.
I'm going to make this joke again. He's Shred Dead Redemption in Aquaman, yeah, so he's bringing that noise.
He's kind of like a youthful
no
boy
dysentery
in this.
Yeah.
His whole character is like, you know, a youthful general. The other guy, it's got Billy Bob Thornton playing Davy Crockett.
I love a Billy Bob.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he's good.
Until he does something bad that he can't take back, and then we don't love him.
Is that what he's done?
I mean, no, all celebrities seem to do that these days. There's always something, isn't there?
Oh, okay, fair enough, yeah. You know, it's just a Western.
Brian Singer's apparently a pedophile now. Who knew?
Brian Singer?
Yeah.
Who is that again?
He's the guy who did the X-Men movies.
Okay.
You remember the originals, the OGs Hubert Jackman and the rest of that cast? Yeah, apparently bad things came out about him. He was doing things he shouldn't have been with a 17-year-old. So, yay! Yay, Hollywood! I feel like to be in that position, you need to be a bit different to the rest of humanity.
I mean, for sure, you do.
Well, I did some cool stuff. Moving on
the movie in Alabama.
Moving on from these things. Which do you want first? Do you want the fun rom-com or the fun animation?
Can I skip the rom-com?
Oh, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah. I want the rom-com.
I'll do the rom-com first. So we watched a movie in the last week, which actually friend of the show, Riggs, Grezen of the pod, recommended to us when he was on, or maybe got cut, I can't remember, but when he was around. And it is called Sleeping with Other People. Now, it is a real nice twist on like a rom-com film. So it's Alison Brie, do you remember? She's in Community. She's in a bunch of stuff these days. And it's Jason Sudeikis. You know Jason Sudeikis? Obviously Ted Lasso in everything now. So it's a few years old. It's not brand new. But it's this sort of weird take on like dating whereby they hooked up once in college. And then now they like re-meet up and it's they're just best mates, but, you know, they're both sleeping for people, but practically in a relationship at the same time. It does all the things rom-coms doesn't do. Like, they sound like real people. They talk like humans. Mm. They are sexually motivated. They go to a party, like a kid's birthday party, like a kid's 10th birthday party on MDMA. It's fucking hilarious.
Nice.
Genuinely really funny. Lots of laugh out loud moments.
Nice. And it's got Adam Brody.
It does have Adam Brody.
And it also has my boy fucking Jason Mantzoukas.
It's got the guy from Severance as well.
Does it?
Yeah, he's the...
Which one?
He's the, you know, the main guy from Severance. I forgot his name.
Oh, the main dude?
Yeah, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah, Adam Scott?
Yeah, he's really good in it. Plays a very different character. Like, he's sort of the bad guy in it.
Ooh.
It's good. I like it a lot. Very fun.
All right.
It's fun to watch with a partner for sheezy.
Where can you watch these things?
I think it might be Netflix, but I can't 100% remember.
On my watch list.
Highly recommend.
Oh, we actually didn't talk about how I've gone cheap on you.
Yeah. Well, we brushed on it last week, but we never went full on.
I forgot. My bad.
Your memory.
Well, Tommy's like very familiar with Turkish Airlines marketing campaigns because of my Netflix decision.
I know all about Hungry Jack's latest deals. Let's say that.
Dude, that might do it because I am trying to do Wedding Shred. If I see a Hungry Jack's commercial, I might keep thinking
about texting you, being like, dude, come on. Because so for anyone who hasn't listened to a recent podcast, Dre recently did a cull, let's call it.
Yes, a massive cull.
Basically, anything that cost him monthly, he was like, nah, don't need it, it's fine. And Netflix...
Just to see if I did, yeah.
Netflix has gone down to the ad version, and I had three separate sets of adverts in one episode of Friends last night.
Really?
20 minutes, three sets
that
of adverts.
That can't be true.
Honest, on my life. Dude, ask the partner.
You know that it's double the cost. Now that I'm on ads, it's actually... They've made it very, very cheap for the cheapest.
So it's 100% increase.
So it's like six bucks up to 12.
Dude, $12.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Like, come on. For someone who
take the wrong
is unemployed, I feel like you can get away with it. Come on.
We'll see. White person
problems.
We'll see.
Well, I'm going to cut down your stand to the ads one.
There is no ad tier.
That show you never fucking watch.
Stan's probably like, surely it's like $3 a month. If it's anything more, it's not worth it.
It's more expensive. Stan has a lot of very good British TV on there. Things that I like
things
to go back
and
watch. I think you would love them as well.
You got just Doctor whatever?
Doctor Who's on Disney now. I'll find you some recommendations.
Give me some stuff. I'm building my watch list. I'm sleeping with other people on there.
Sure we've talked about a show called Life on Mars previously. Has regularly been voted as the best TV ending of all time. It's phenomenal. It's highly worth it. Just go and just Google it. Go check out Life on Mars. As John Sim, who you'd probably know from ironically Doctor Who and a bunch of other stuff. He's done movies.
How old is this?
Ooh, it's probably mid 2000s.
2006 to 2007?
Yeah, something around that region.
After a near-fatal car accident?
Yes.
Okay.
I highly recommend going away, Googling this. Check it out. Don't read the description because it's probably going to just confuse you a little bit. Just dive straight in. First two or three episodes going
to
give you
watch list.
Real good.
Stan will get experience. One login from the last month, year.
I should really cut it. One other thing I did that I think you're going to really enjoy, recommended by one of the friends of the show, I've not got the name here, I do apologize, is a movie called Mitchells versus Machines. Now, this, once again, great.
Sounds dumb.
Great for being with a partner. Dumb premise, really fun film.
Okay.
So it's by Lord and Miller, the two guys who did the Lego movie, they did Into the Spider-Verse. They are like absolute animation legends, and the movie is effectively about this dysfunctional family who, like, the daughter's an art student and the dad doesn't understand because he's like an old-fashioned kind of dad, and they always butt heads. And what happens is it's a little bit of a play on, you know, the iRobot thing, whereby some big tech company creates an app and it goes rogue and it takes over the world with using like the brand new technology, which is effectively the new robot types. Really nicely executed, really fun, got some really good voice cast in there. Like, all of it's so heartwarming. Like, it's the thing I find about this movie, which like, baffles me so much, is that this has a budget of 50 to 100 million, right? So, like, it's not the most expensive movie you're ever going to see. Had a good voice, has a really great voice cast, like I mentioned. Like, Olivia Colman's great in this, bunch of folks, Danny McBride's in this, and it is just phenomenal storytelling.
Yeah.
Even as like an animation, and animation sometimes gets a bit of a bad rap, but like every single note it hits, every single emotional beat, the music stings are perfect for the moment.
Machines and what?
Mitchells versus Machines.
Mitchell's.
And the thing that I don't understand is like, how is it so easy for these guys when you get people who are spending 250, 300 million on like a blockbuster with the best writers, the best music, the best everything, And it's so bad. Like, they just don't get any of the story beats right. Like, and I'm not talking about Dune 2. We're going to talk about this in a moment. It's a phenomenal movie. I'm talking about things like Aquaman. You know what I mean? Movies we've watched recently. Things like Argyle that we've had friends of the show, Richie Staines, calling out is one of the worst movies he's ever watched. Like,
did he really?
How is it these guys just get it and so few others get it right? I don't get it.
I think it's just like the studios, these aren't rushed.
Yeah, right.
I think that's the big thing. They're not rushed and they're not like spending a bunch of money on people that like, you know.
They shouldn't.
Yeah, like I think it's just because it's not rushed, you can just make it good.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know what I mean?
Seem rushed. Like, I didn't even know about it until it came.
Seems like something where they were like, let's make it look like, what's the Moulin Rouge? With a spy movie, like the art direction of Moulin Rouge, with a spy movie that's not a spy movie.
Have you seen the trailer for Argyle?
Yes. You don't think it looks like that?
I don't think it looks like
Moulin Rouge. The way they dress?
It looks like a very generic 2020s.
I just mean like the color palette. Like it's sure. A super explosive color palette with like a bunch of really, really in actors and a half-baked script that like both spy people and the moms will like.
Oh my God.
And they're like, okay, yeah. And then somebody like writes that and it's just like bad because they've like been given a directive that's not actually from a place of I want to write with this message. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like these guys get it right so easily. So many people could learn lessons from them. Mitchells versus the Machines, 100% worth a watch. Like so much fun. Your partner would like it too if she can focus on it for more than 15 minutes.
These are two good selections for you from my partner.
Highly recommend.
She would probably agree to both of these.
Okay, good.
So you're helping me out.
Don't let her watch the trailer first. The trailer focuses more on the like the robots and stuff. Just get her straight into the movie.
That will never work.
Okay.
She has to watch the trailer. I'll just say it's like an animated movie. You'll like it.
Yeah, okay, good. Any more recommendations from yourself?
Dude, honestly, I've been deep in the books. You don't want to hear about it. And it's spoilers. You can't hear about it.
I can't hear about it. We'll come back to it when you finish this book and we'll touch on the story so far. You can give a very vague overview.
Succinct.
How are you liking it? Stuff like that.
You haven't gotten farther than page 20 yet?
I'm about 7 chapters into the new one.
Okay.
They're short chapters though, so I'm not
kidding. Yeah, I was going to say that. I don't think that's very far.
It's not. Guys, if you have any recommendations for us, anything that we should be talking about, anything that you think our partners would watch with us, please hit us up at podcast, and definitely things they wouldn't. I love watching them to sci-fi. Hit us up at podcastassemble or thepodcastassemble@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, www.podcastassemble.com. You can find all of our details there. All that stuff's happening. Check us out. Now, DL. Do you want to preface our main topic?
It's the main topic theme.
Dune 2.
It's back, Dune 2.
It's Dune 2.
I'm doing part 2.
I'm doing Christopher Walken for the rest of the show.
It's Dune 2, baby. We're going to do non-spoilers and then spoilers. But to kick off, do you have a stupid plot summary, Leo?
Yes, I do. Did you, by the way, see that like the Dune, this is like the biggest bubblehead moment for me. I didn't realize it until yesterday. The D, the U, the N, and the E are all the same. They're just rotated.
You mean in the...
In the art direction?
Yeah, it's cool.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Anyway, side note.
Good fonting. I'm a big font guy. Yeah, I love a good font.
Like, why can't I get Dune font on my iPhone? That would be cool.
Imagine sending text in the Dune font. I'd be like...
I already have fat thumbs as it is.
Stupid plot summary, baby.
Paul's mom goes full island boy. Hereditary chic. As Paul goes full Coxman White Jesus.
Oh, wow.
That's my dumb summary.
Simple and effective.
Yes.
Mine's a little bit different. Mine is just, we return to Arrakis, a world where you become a man by riding a worm, and size definitely matters. And ironically, in a cinema, you can fuck the popcorn. It's nice and simple. I don't know if you saw all of the memes about the popcorn holders that they were giving out.
Did they even have those? Couldn't even buy them.
No.
I would have bought one.
I'm sure they took
I would have put it on your head.
I'd have just taken it home and had sex with it.
I would have liked to eat popcorn out of that. I would have liked to eat popcorn in general right now. We should have popped some.
You didn't get time. This is, of course, from director Denis Villeneuve, one of our favorites over here at the pod, and based on Frank Herbert's, well, obviously unfilmable novel of the same name, because that's what everybody believed leading into this. But now I think he's proved them kind of wrong.
I don't understand why people thought this was unfilmable when you have things like Star Wars.
Right.
I think David Lynch just did a really bad job.
Well, I feel like we're going to talk about this.
It was really bad, in every way that you could make basic mistakes.
I think it's just like a lot of the book is so dense and it's such utter nonsense for the most of the time with all these weird lizard-gib words and stuff. It's just confusing.
Unadaptable would be a better way to describe it.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, because it's like, how do you adapt this story? I agree with that.
And this brings back all of the big hitters. Pretty much every fucker in Hollywood is literally in this. There's Timothée Chalamet, obviously, as Paul Atreides. Zendaya's got a bigger role in this. Rebecca Ferguson's back as Jessica. Javier Bardem is back as Stilgar.
Steals the show.
We will talk about.
Steals the show.
Josh Brolin is back as Get Everything with Guns in the Air. We have Austin Butler as Fade Rautha. We have Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Leah Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård. Just jam-packed cast. Like, wow. Wowza, wowza, wow.
Austin, buddy.
We talked about this last time, I think. I go back and check out our episode. I think it was around episode 45. It's probably terrible quality, knowing us.
No. Yeah, it's old school.
I did actually listen back to the set. So we did, around episode 35, we did the 1984 version with Kyle MacLachlan, who was a 30-year-old man playing a teenager. And then we came a bit later and we did the first Denis Villeneuve movie, which was actually while we were still locked down in COVID. So it was kind of some much needed nutrition at the time. And it's interesting seeing this from the perspective of being out of that and having more headspace to talk to. But I did want to call out, I really like the diverse cast in this. And from there, I thought I would bring back an old favorite segment of the show that we do some weeks, but not every week. And I try and bring it up when I have time. Goofy IMDb pitch.
Okay, that's here. Let's now, see. Who's our reigning champion?
Our current champion, current MVP is William Fichtner, who is the bank manager in The Dark Knight. Who pretty much, it's a pretty good IMDb picture, except he's sucking on a fucking lemon.
He's
got a really weird color grading to it. I'm not sure what's happening with that.
He's a great actor. Weird hair.
Yeah.
And weird IMDb pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he looks like he probably either needs or has attempted plugs and they've not worked.
I think he should shave.
Somewhere in the middle. He should just get rid of it.
I think he should
just get rid of it. But like, that's the thing I love about him. He's just like a normal looking dude in Hollywood where everyone is like a picture perfect human being.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys like that. Yeah.
Love that about him. So we have a challenger.
Okay.
Now, for anyone who hasn't listened in previously, Goofy IMDb pitcher, we're not making fun of people's appearances. It's all about, this is your key way to be showcased to audiences.
Unless you're an uggo. Then I'm making fun of.
Unless you're an uggo.
I'm just kidding. I love to make Tommy uncomfortable, team. That is a big part of my job here.
We have the Reverend Mother from Dune 2, whose name I'm going to butcher. It's Gwisi Merli. And
let's see it.
This is her Goofy IMDb pitch deal. To explain this to our beautiful listeners.
I mean, she looks like a dried out mummified nun. But I think she was a horror, wasn't she?
I think it's from a horror movie.
I think it is from a horror movie.
I think it's like The Nun or something, but like, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's the kind of role.
Look at them teeth.
My God. I was talking about how I've been flossing. She has not been. She's not been flossing.
It's not a good picture.
No, I mean, but I guess like, you know, that's kind of similar to the role that she played in this movie, really old lady that, you know.
True.
Spoiler, or I guess not spoilers, it's early, it's in the trailer, that dies and passes on all her memories to the
true
Paul's mom. So, like, maybe that's what she's going for.
I mean,
this is her marketing strategy.
Ironically, this happened last time we talked about this because we talked about David Dastmalchian's picture, who is a favorite of the pod.
Yeah.
But his like IMDb picture is just him marketing the role that he has in every film.
Yeah, so I think it adds up.
Fair. So
I think it adds up.
You don't think this is Goofy? You think this is...
I think we're going to see her in, you know, like Nuns
The Nun 2.
or what's another, you know, The Ring remake or whatever.
Sure.
Ghost and Ghostbusters.
She will be in Ghostbusters 3. Frozen.
Like, you know, Frozen Ghost 4. Like, I don't know. I think it could happen.
So your choice for Goofy IMDb picture is...
I think we're sticking with our boy.
We're sticking with Willie. I don't feel like we've had a really good contender for a while.
The talent is mediocre. I guess the talent's been getting better because people are doing
the irony.
What they should be doing.
Bitter irony.
We can thank the Lord for that.
We'll come back strong. We'll come back stronger. So talk to me then. So what's the plot of part two of Dune?
You know, this follows, I believe, shortly after the fall of House Atreides. So you're seeing Paul and his mom kind of being taken in by the Fremen after he's killed that old mate who is a good warrior. I forget his name. There's from part one. There's not a lot that has changed except that the Harkonnens have basically taken back over, you know, Arrakis with all their old gear.
Yeah.
And we follow Paul as he acclimates into the Fremen as an exile and slowly but surely makes kind of a name for himself amongst the Fremen people with the help of Shani, played by our old beautiful Zendaya, a female Fremen northern warrior.
She's a gangster in this.
She is a gangster, right?
And she don't need no man.
She don't need no man. She don't need no man. She kind of proves that. Paul's got to earn his stripes a bit, but what starts as kindness kind of blossoms into a romance. I think
she just like those skinny white boys.
She has a thing.
She likes them skinny
honestly,
white
Tom,
boys.
I don't know. We Tommy may have a Hollins. Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing going on here. If it comes out later, it would have come out a while ago though.
Yeah, because true. That's
been filmed like 3 years ago. But yeah, and she commits herself to romancing him after he kind of commits to her cause, and she proves himself as a worthy soldier and peer. But this kind of burgeoning? How do I say this word?
Burgeoning.
Burgeoning.
Begudgeoning.
Burgeoning.
Bludgeoning.
Bludgeoning.
She's bludgeoning him with romance.
This burgeoning love begins to come into direct conflict with his Bene Gesserit mother's goals for him to become the Kaz Kwasatzan or whatever the fuck it is.
Lithalgib.
The chosen one. After she gets on some next level horror shit for a bit, ingesting the minds of all the other witches of...
She gets really fucked up.
Of all years
she,
past.
She takes so much Molly that she believes she remembers
she,
everyone.
She literally
every life
becomes
she's
the
ever
memory
had.
Of all grandmothers and squawks like one as well.
And effectively it sets up a war.
Yeah, and it sets up, you know, this path where, you know, people, you know, Paul's intent and wants are going to be in conflict with his destiny and fate. And we really explore that for most of the film. This, you know, this is a story about really Paul on a collision course with destiny as he makes a legitimate and meritful name for himself. But that also pushes him towards, you know, the old, there's the, basically there's two Freemen, right? The North and the South. The South are fundamentalists. And he's afraid of jumping into that because of his visions.
My favorite about this movie is it's clearly incredibly deep. It's clearly incredibly full of themes and tones and all of this beautiful. Yeah. That was really good.
It was like every given moment.
That was really good.
I just want to give you like the full.
You were pitch perfect.
Was I?
Yeah. Like,
oh, we got it recorded.
No, but like, so it has all of this beautiful stuff woven into it. Like, it is such a deep movie, but I'm just sitting there like 90% of the time being like, ah, pretty
worm asshole.
Pretty cinematography and worm assholes. It was just so good to look at. I was distracted the whole time.
It
is amazing.
But that, like, it doesn't really distract from it. I think it adds to it mostly,
yeah, it did,
obviously.
Really,
but
I'm
the worm butthole
completely.
Invasive thoughts,
you
definitely distracted.
This is part two of your worm butthole thoughts because you were talking about this in the previous one.
I don't know, but like, those are invasive thoughts.
I mean, you're the one who's thinking it, buddy. I'm not about that life.
Come on.
My favorite part about this is definitely Paul's transition into being
transition
a complete meme. Oh. He becomes the Lithalgib.
Lithalgib.
It's so funny that like that this has been
Paul
meme.
Forrest. Lithalgib.
This got memed to death before it even hit cinemas. Probably it was amazing. Like just some of the acting in this is truly by Javier Bardem is truly
really,
spot on.
It's really good.
It's almost
it's
on
like
the
a perfect comedic effect.
Yeah, it's on the cusp of being like
goofy.
Silly,
yeah,
but
it
not. It's fantastic. I think one thing I'm interested to know more about though is because. We talked about this last time, and it will be forever in my peril, that I got about halfway through the book. So dense, Dune. So dense, so thick. Doesn't have as good font as the current one does. And I just gave up. I was like, fuck this. Like, it's too much. There's too many weird words. Lithalgib, for example. Tell me what are the differences here. The key ones, not spoilery ones.
Oh, you want to do that now? It's kind of hard. A lot of them are kind of spoilery, so I'll try and avoid those ones. We'll do the rest of those after spoilers. But I think one of the biggest changes that they make for the better is Chani's perspective on the prophecy of the Lithalgib.
And the youth's perspective.
Yeah, and the youth's perspective on the Lithalgib prophecy.
The youth.
Is that, like, you know, it's very different. They're against it. They think it's religious.
She's like,
ho-ho, jargon.
She's like, Paul Atreides, why are you doing this? You're not the Messiah.
I mean, but it's also like it's like a conflicted thing within the group, right? It's like,
yeah, for sure.
She's like, hey, like the older people need to, in the South need to stop talking about this religious fanaticism. Yeah, it's how they keep us in their grip.
It's so a beautiful reflection on society.
Yeah. And it investigates the Bene Gesserit more than the book ever does.
Wow.
So like, because she blames the Bene Gesserit for this like thing taking over her people and its influence, almost like a little colonialism.
I mean, it's
vibes,
true. Yeah, you know? It's really true.
So I thought that was a really good change. I thought, you know, whereas in the book, you basically have people all really believe in the prophecy, if I remember correctly, but don't believe that it's Paul.
Okay.
This is like, there's that, and there's people that just don't believe in the prophecy.
Well, I like the idea that even in this movie, they play with the sort of themes of there could be multiple people who could be, you know, the one, the Lithalgib, whatever it is. So, for example, in this, we're going to talk about Austin Butler's character in a moment. It's kind of woven in the Bene Gesserit. They didn't throw all their eggs in one basket. No. They spread their lot out.
And I believe that is a book that's in the books.
Okay.
I think that the way he did this, the way he explained it in a movie is really well done. Because like that could have been super confusing and annoying, and he did a really good job of adapting that. Because I was kind of confused just, by that in the book.
Up top, we should be saying like he has done a wonderful job, Denis Villeneuve.
It's better than the book.
It is. Yeah. I mean, most things are. But they
shocking take.
No, I genuinely
shocking.
Genuinely, I don't know why the book really put me off. I think it was just all of the fact that it didn't pander to you, and that can be a good and a bad thing. But it didn't give you any ways into it. You literally have to go
explain
away.
A lot of it in the back,
right?
3/4.
Yeah,
but the back 3/4 also becomes so absurd.
Yeah,
like agreed. There's like a fucking 2-year-old fully adult baby walking around. Like,
they do a good job of sort of perspecting this with. I quite like what they did there.
But yeah, which is that spoilers?
It is a bit spoilery. Okay. What I really liked about this was that they didn't keep it static from the first movie. They evolved with it, and one thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is the fact that. Not only did they build on it, but they also must have used some of the cinematography from the first film because some of the shots were shot for shot. Like, they were part of visions that Paul had from the first film. But as well, obviously, they've grown up. It's like 3-4 years ago now. So they have grown up. They're different people. So I wonder how much of it they reshot as perfectly as possible and how much they sort of just reused because it was already there and it was part of the prophecy.
I think
in the
also
first.
Like they filmed them, didn't they film pretty close together?
Pretty much back to back, yeah.
And like it just has been a while because of COVID, not because of
sure.
Like completely. And like the writer's strike, and also like it was like actually filmed. They weren't that much older.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, because even like you look at Timothée Chalamet now, and you're like, you look like way less. Like he's still a baby.
He's definitely a twink.
But his face has matured a bit more.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He looks like more babyish.
Isn't he dating one of the Kardashians or something now? I'm sure he is.
That's an agent move for sure. That's like a publicist. Like, yeah, kiss her at the Oscars.
Why not? Yeah. Do it. Do it, Timothée Chalamet.
I mean, he's like literally, he's doing everything right.
Imagine if his agent like, was Christopher Walken, who didn't really understand. He's like, Timothée, like, just kiss her at the Oscars. Like, it's fine.
It worked out.
Yeah, it did. It
fucking went viral. But he literally, his career, he's doing everything right.
He's amazing.
So far. Like, love every him. Choice he's made. I'm not sure I like love him. I like him. But like my point is like his actual
even
movies,
Wonka was good because of him.
That actually is true. That shows that he has talent.
Yeah,
for sure,
exactly.
But my point being,
I think this film does too.
His film selection has been like, this is how you become the like you know bro next bro actor that like everyone loves. You know, like the Jake Gyllenhaal, the Leos, like the films they pick.
I think he's on a more of a Leo trajectory.
I agree. But I don't think Jake Gyllenhaal is only different. They're actually quite similar. I mean,
yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal started as Bubble Boy. Leo started as What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I mean,
that is such a good film.
They're both like, you know, one of them is a comedy. But
an interesting rewatch, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, with today's sensibilities. Not going to lie to you. It's very different. But like the cinematography and world building, like we're already in this world, right? Like we just get thrown back in. And I kind of like that. Doesn't pander to you, doesn't, and I know your partner really wanted it to do like a last time on Dune.
Well, that's just because she freaking stupid didn't, that's because she did not pay attention in the first time we watched the movie. Fair. I was on her phone the whole time. And then, you know, like, it was like, why don't I remember anything? I'm like, because this is already a very, very confusing film. Cool. But then we thought about it and we're like, actually the first movie isn't. Basically, they have to go to the planet, bad guys kill them and betray them.
And then they go to the desert.
Go to the desert.
Yeah, they do. That's literally
the plot.
Yeah. But like, so one thing I hadn't talked about and probably should have done was we actually rewatched the first film like 2 or 3 nights prior to watching this. Just to get in the headspace, remember the world, remember the weird phrases that I'd completely forgotten who was who in the zoo. And I found I could skip certain chunks of it without feeling I was missing out.
Well, there's not a lot of plot.
No.
There's a lot of, like, that's my biggest critique, I think, would be that
they, we talked about that last time, yeah.
Is that, like, they missed, like, it was beautiful. I loved it. It was a bit slow, but I loved it.
Yeah.
It's just that, like, there was other stuff for them to put in that also would have made some of the culminations of certain character arcs in this one better if you added it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that is the...
And it wouldn't have been a big change either.
This one will be a much better rewatch.
Well, we'll talk about that, I think, as we're going through. Yeah. But I did like the worms in this. They're more fleshed out. They're more interesting. You see them as little babies. But they're like these just terrifying force of nature. Man got a ride. Man's got a ride if he wants to become a man. This is what happens here.
Fleshed out, riding the worms. This is the innuendos here.
The question I had for you, though, is right. So they finally get to ride the worms. It's in the trailers. We're not spoiling anything for you. They finally see Paul riding the worm. And how they do it is they jump on top and then they chuck these like little hooks into the worm and hold on for dear life. You tell me how the fuck they're steering that thing, because I have no idea. Or do they just jump on and they go the direction it's going and go, I guess I'm going this way.
They pull on the flaps.
More innuendo they bingo. Let's keep playing this
game. Are you telling me
that ginormous worm is feeling any of that?
Yeah, he's like, owie, okay, I'll go up. Owie, okay, I'll go right.
I thought they'd be more to that. I thought like maybe they'd be like, I don't know, shocked or something. Like there'd be shocks in those little things so they could.
Maybe there is.
Like that's like an ant on you. Like you'd barely feel
well,
it.
Well, I mean, it's like, it still hurts. Like you get a paper cut, you're like, ow. You know? Like, it's not like these things are like man, big hooks.
You make good points.
Yes. And it's like,
make good points.
It could be sensitive, like a butthole.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it very well could be like a bubble. I like the sort of like
bubble
ecological themes that comes with sort of like the, you know, there's a lot baked into those worms that I find really fascinating. The one thing about the world that I didn't love, and I feel like really, I feel like Dennis needed to do something about the 1984 film. Like, why didn't he bring some semblance of that back? Give us the pugs. Put the pugs in this just for a scene, two scenes.
No.
Do it. Do it.
Do it. Do it, Dennis.
Oh, I love it. Anything to do with that first one. I think he could have given like a little nod, you know, maybe put Kyle MacLachlan in there for a scene. Just a little nod, anything, just a little Easter egg.
I literally think there's nothing you can take from
that film. No, there is. I've been completely facetious.
I actually thought the worms in that film weren't terrible for the time.
For the time, they were pretty fun. Yeah. I like that.
But our worms are better.
Your worms, DL, are definitely better. So I think one thing I wanted to chat to you about was the fact that people in the media are talking about how Austin Butler's performance is apparently on par with the likes of Heath Ledger as the Joker. Now, no.
I don't think anyone's saying that. Yeah, I think that's just like what people are saying.
It's media discord.
People are just saying that. That's like a hashtag. Like it's like a Russian bot.
It's a different league.
It's like, dude, he's got like five lines.
Yeah, he's better.
It's like, and one of them is like, may thine eyes shatter. It's like he's got a lisp.
I like what he's going for. Like, oh, I like no, the idea I, of
dude,
it.
Dude, he was awesome. But like, it's just not the same level of character. Heath Ledger is basically a main character in that Batman film.
He's got as many lines, if not more, than
Batman.
He is the main character.
And
in
Batman
film.
Doesn't even talk much.
Yeah. Other than like,
swear to me.
Swear to me. I was born in the dark. One of my most favorite quotable films. But like, I thought it was a really good performance overall. Like, I really enjoyed it. The flip side of that is that one of the big scary bad guys of the last film, and I've got to give a big shout out to Dave Bautista for just being a big scaredy cat in this.
That's, dude,
all he does is run away and cry. Every single scene he's in is just him being ridiculed
or just throwing a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
Or like, all in all, just acting like a child.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think the Harkonnens in general, I really enjoy
white child.
I think he's definitely at the point now where he's not bothered about the muscle anymore, surely. You could tell in this he had some padding on him. I was like, good for you, man.
Well, I think it's like cool how they juxtapose like lean Austin Butler, who's actually the, like the savage and like,
yeah, absolutely.
And like the one to be scared of, with like the big buff wuss.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting though, because in the last one, he was pretty scary, like Dave Bautista's character. He didn't have a lot to do.
I guess like that's the part where I'm like, surely he would be a good fighter.
You'd think so. You'd assume it'd be like a great fighter the way he's allowed. He's good.
Yeah.
But isn't he like the Baron's favorite son or something?
In the book. I think he's just more like a more direct descendant.
Sure.
Because the other guy's like a nephew.
Yeah, right. Okay. Speaking of the Baron, Stellan Skarsgård. Wowza, he's fun in this. As the partner loves to call him, the big slug man. He's just a gangster in this.
He's kind of like a mix of Jabba the Hutt and the guys from Prometheus, I think you said in the show, the theater. Or like,
with like the sensibilities of like something out of The Godfather. Like, yeah, he's got all of that.
Yeah.
And how you managed to smash those three together, who came up with that? I have no idea.
I don't know.
I like the look of them though. Like, I think we talked about this last time we talked about Dune, that whole completely bald, like in the books, I believe Fade Rauther is this like beautiful human being who's like a shining star, but also a psychopath. Like, he's Sting in the other movie.
Yeah.
I love that they gave them all this weird sperm look, and it's great.
I think so.
You know all about that.
Yeah, I would know. I do think it's in, like, this is going to be, you know, Arrakis is going to be a tough environment for their complexion.
Yeah.
I do think, like, if they haven't thought about it, they need sunscreen.
They'd make a killing.
They'd need, dude.
Open a couple of stalls.
You know that there's the saying, like, the people that made money in the gold rush, the people selling picks and shovels, like, you know, the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be the next infrastructure of AI, right? That's what everyone's betting about. Like, The infrastructure of Arrakis is literally wigs and sunscreen for all these Harkonnens. Like, they would pay top dollar.
Open up a stall.
There are sunburns out there.
I love it. I think one thing
you cry.
One thing you mentioned before that we should really touch on is some of the characterization. Now, I do think there were some missed opportunities to build some ideas into the first film that could really be expanded upon in this one. But one character I think is a little oddly represented is Paul. So obviously Timothée Chalamet's character. Like, the whole, his whole thing is that he doesn't, he's the whole Jon Snow. He's like, she is my queen.
I don't want it
the whole way through. And that's great. It's amazing. But then like two-thirds of the way through, it's just like snap your fingers and it just changes.
I don't even think it's like the, it's not full. You're right. It does just change. And that is like the big critique I think I have. But I can't remember if it's like that in the book and this is just the way the story
is. It just felt rushed. Like, there wasn't an impetus for him to change.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is like the, It doesn't feel as Jon Snowy in the sense of like he's still doing he wants to help
absolutely
them. He wants
true.
To do all the things. He just doesn't want it to be credited as like he doesn't want it to become this religious zeal. He doesn't want he's like it's just us all of us doing this. Like that's what's happening.
I guess the crux of that character then is that he is told, is it north or south he has to go?
South is where they're more fundamentalist.
Okay, right. Yeah, so he's told that he has to go south to build finish his army effectively. But he has had these visions of what could happen if he goes south, starts a holy war.
They're going to take him as a religious figure. He's
terrified. Yeah. But what I think happens is when Fade Rauther arrives, effectively, he just goes ham. He's just like, fuck these guys. I'm going to do all the shit that we haven't done yet. And forces their hand to go south.
Yeah, I think that that's like one of the parts that like, if he goes south, it's going to happen no matter what, is kind of like what they try and say. And I think the other part that I think is where it got missed is like, when Fade Rauther takes over managing the Arrakis, he does a better job of it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, the Freemen are losing and they're like, people are dying. Paul's kind of being forced into like, I need an advantage. Yeah. Right. And so he does go, and I guess we're not into spoilers yet. So I'll leave it at that for now.
No, but I think that's interesting. Like, and for a film that's quite long, let's talk about pacing in a sec. It's a long movie, but it doesn't feel long. Like it's well-paced, and I think the action, there's enough action to keep you intrigued with enough of Denis Villeneuve's beautiful cinematography.
And crescendos with the music and score.
Right. And it keeps you flowing along the river. But like, I do think for a movie that's this long, it wouldn't have hurt to have a few extra little bits here and there to just push some of these characterizations and changes in characterization forwards.
I think a dialogue sequence that makes it more clearly defined that he's about to make a big choice is what it was missing. And I think one more scene where they did quite a bit with Gurney being like the influence of like, take your legacy, fight, use these people. Like they did a good job there.
I think so too.
But I guess my point is it didn't feel like Paul was receptive to that.
Sure.
And then suddenly he does change.
Right.
So that is like, that's the part that's missing.
It's interesting that there isn't a dialogue. There isn't like something to change him. It doesn't seem to be.
And in the book, I'll say this is one of the differences when you say it, because we're not talking book spoilers. We're not talking movie spoilers. We're talking book. He does have there's a 2-year gap between part one and part two, and he has a son with Shani, and that son is killed in that Sheik attack. And so that's kind of more of a impetus for him to, I think, do something that we kind of miss.
That would have been a good impetus. He wouldn't be impetus if he had a son with Shani.
He would not.
I have to call out Florence Pugh in this. Actually, I can't really fault anyone. It's just great. Like, the diverse cast is fantastic. Everyone's pretty great. As a character who's really fleshed out, who's not really in the books, bar some weird scripts at the beginning, I think that Princess Irulan character is great. She's really stern. Yeah. She's really powerful, but feminine at the same time. Like, that's a hard balance. And I feel like some people in this, you know, pushing her to do one thing where she's conflicted because she feels that, you know, like them wiping out the Atreides was the wrong thing to do. She works with that material really well, I think.
She does, for sure. The one thing I do question is, why does anybody trust these
the Bene Gesserits?
Like, that is something I left this leaving this film, and I'm like, did they answer that in the book? Like, why do they? You know? But we'll talk about that in spoilers.
I wonder if it's just because they've been there for so long.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like, we'll talk about it in spoilers. It's hard to talk about now.
It's like Worm Tongue in The Lord of the Rings. They've just buried their way into the brains of the elites, so they need them. We talked about pacing already. Like, you just have to indulge Denis Villeneuve at times. You've just got to be like, yeah. Like, take your time
not
with
at
this
times,
scene.
Always.
Yes. Okay. Great.
Until he proves that I do not have to. I mean, which he's yet to do.
Yet to do. Yeah. Hopefully we'll never. One of my favorite directors. Let's talk a bit about action then, because you've sort of hinted at a little bit. There's some really interesting action in this. The CGI is completely flawless wall to wall whenever there's any space action, like any of the ornithopters or any of the big battle scenes. But for me, the things that steal the show when it's smaller scale. Yeah. So there's a scene when we go to the Harkonnen home planet and Fade Rautha is having his birthday fight. And all of a sudden, the saturation just zips out of the film. And it becomes this black and white, like, almost like, I don't know how to describe it, like, guttural, Sin City-esque fight scene with him between a couple of guys, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Such an interesting choice.
It is.
And it's apparently, the Denis Villeneuve himself, there's a reason for this, because apparently there is a black sun on that planet that orbits around it, so it takes all of the color out.
Yeah, I think there was also something like more moral about it too that I read him talking about,
right,
where
right.
He's like, you know, in this era, like, because these guys are pure evil,
yeah,
when you light them it is all contrast or dark, like,
oh, wow,
it's like
okay.
Darks and like the instead of showing more color it shows less,
yeah, yeah,
because they're the definition
and they're
of
all
evil.
Together so it yeah. becomes yeah that's a really interesting
it was like a tonal thing as well that he wanted to
interesting yeah. I really like the guerrilla warfare of the Fremen as well, though. Like, the way they were taking down the Harkonnens. Just simple, effective, playing to their strengths, understanding yeah. tactics the way they'd never done before. Such a good, interesting way of building those characters.
Yeah, and it was just fun and cool looking.
He's the Lisa Gibb.
Lisa Gibb! He flipped the FaceTime around. Lisa Gibb!
He created a PDF. Lisa Gibb! It's great. Fabulous, fabulous characterization. Actually, I really liked him in this. I'm not going to lie to you. He was fantastic. What a great characterization of Stilgar.
Stilgar, man.
Having up our den, what a ledge.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a bit too close to like talking spoilers here. So should we do a little bit of tones and themes?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Where anything to say before we move on?
Mainly just like the art direction and design in this is like phenomenal and unique. And
unreal.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've talked about how pretty it is in the cinematography and the...
blends
CGI,
well,
but
yeah.
but I also think just like the design, like,
yeah,
it's very very unique, and I don't think it's described that way in the book. I think this is like mostly whoever was in charge of that, and yeah. it's pretty badass.
Well, like for sure, I know the Harkonnens aren't like this in the book. They aren't all this bold yeah. race. I really like some of those design choices, definitely around things like the various clothings they all wear. Like mm-hmm. all of that is fantastic,
mm-hmm.
really totally. Uniquely created. Little details down to like, so it's Fade Rautha's birthday and he has these fights in like it's like not an auditorium, what is it, it's like
gladiator,
yeah, stadium, exactly, it's like that. That so but they have their version of fireworks which
were
are kind
cool.
of wet almost,
they were cool, I like
so
it.
Interesting yeah. such an interesting like POV on what other planet how other planets might celebrate.
Yeah, I also like that scene choices. Where it's like right after that she's like he's like your Bene Gesserit tricks won't work on me, 2 seconds later he
yeah, yeah, yeah
it's like yeah they did bro they did work on you I must say.
Tones and themes,
so many to count my man.
Coming of age.
Yeah, I mean it is definitely like a hero's coming of age tale yeah. but like kind of like I think as you we'll see in spoilers, but I don't think this is necessarily one where you're like, it's like a, you know, this is a role model.
Yeah, sure. It's not a classic
yeah,
hero's, hero's
but,
arc.
But it is definitely a hero's arc. And I would say fate versus free will is
yeah.
obviously like, you see that heavily in the
Absolutely.
Story. And religion as a mechanism for both hope, but also control.
Yeah, I've got that too. That's awesome. Yeah. yeah. Not even that, just the nature of power.
Yeah.
Like using religion as a way of controlling. So like the flip of the perspective of what you said. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so deep, this movie. It's so delicious. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's so much. Let's do three best and three worst then. So three reasons why people might want to see this film, non-spoilers, and three reasons why they might want to see it.
Oh, for sure. The visuals, the score,
yes.
the art direction. I think the biggest thing I think is it's like a strong adaption.
Yes.
And a faithful adaption at the same time. So meaning like, if you read the books, you're going to love this. If you didn't, you still can watch it.
Absolutely.
My partner, her only critique was, I thought it was going to end 5 times. But she said, honestly, it didn't feel long. And she understood 90% of it.
Mine
which is
loved
like
it.
Shocking.
Mine
I'm
loved
telling you, it's
it.
Shocking. Like, she does not do sci-fi. And it turns her brain off, but she could keep up with it. It was
amazing.
It's in a testament for sure. And then the third is just great acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got cinematography. You kind of said that. just Chani, and it says Chain here, it's clearly also corrected. Chani just being a strong, independent woman. I really like that POV of someone around Paul who just didn't take his shit, didn't, you know, think he was the chosen one.
It would be boring if you didn't have
that. She was like, prove yourself. Yeah, I really like that. And also just like that theme of, you know, free will versus fate. Like, yeah. I know it's a little overdone and it's classic sci-fi, but it's great. It's done really nicely in this.
I thought that this was like the perfect way to do it because like,
agreed.
He's basically like having this mediocre rise in a way that is like totally not, it's not like supernatural. It's like he's obviously gifted and talented.
It shows
and
as
he's
well.
Obviously
yeah.
getting help.
Yeah,
and so it could be naturally happening.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
And then he's a warrior.
And he is a warrior. He's been trained. Like it all makes sense. It's merocratic. It actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Legitimate. And then there's also this other like supernatural, spicy, hidden, like, you know, mythical side where you're like, okay, I can also see how that, like why people would think that. Like seeing it from afar in this place where when you breathe, you take acid, basically. Like, I liked the mix of both.
We're going to talk about that in just a moment because I have one thing about that I would like to pick your brain about, actually. Yeah. What's your worst, very quickly?
Worst would probably be, I don't quite understand what drives Paul to do something that's pretty big in the film. We'll talk about it later. It's a pretty big pinnacle switch.
Yeah.
We talked about it a bit. He does, you know, make a pivot and it's not as intentional as I would have liked. For something as important as it should have been. I'd say the same thing for Gurney's story. I'd say like I liked the way it ended, but I wish we got more in the first to make it a little more substantive.
We've got pretty much the same points here.
And same thing I would argue with you know, some of the plot points that the Bene Gesserit eventually reveal. It's like, okay, House Atreides, they were betrayed in the first one for a reason. I would like to see that reason a bit more in the first one. So it's mostly criticism of the first one.
Yeah.
Not really the second.
Not giving us enough. I kind of agree with you on that. The only thing I have which is different to that is the fact that they didn't have the line in this, get everything with guns in the air. Like they should have brought it back.
It's a big miss.
I feel like they could have.
The other thing, there was no Mark Wahlberg, like at all.
Right?
Where could we have put him in? 10. Where could we have fit him?
Well, yeah.
There's no plants, so I guess you have
Christopher Walken, so do you need Mark Wahlberg?
Well, there's no plants to talk to. It is dry in the desert. So like, I guess.
So true.
Not.
It would have been better with Mark Wahlberg. That's a running reference of ours.
Yes.
I think that's from our Dark Knight episode.
I mean, it's always...
Surely not.
I mean, any episode.
We brought it back.
Any
it's
movie.
Back for good. Yeah. So let's talk critical reception very quickly. We'll run through a couple and do our own. Can you guess from what the current IMDb score is for this?
I think I've seen it. Okay. It is a 9.
It's a flat 9. Yeah, it is. What about Rotten Tomatoes?
98.
Ooh, it's 93. Yeah.
I don't know. The other day was a 98, like Rise of the Apes of King Apes or whatever.
Like there's...
That was a 98. This is 92.
I mean, like 93. It's real long. I can see why people might be a bit like, I'm done after
you
a while.
You can see the runtime before you enter the movie.
That's also true. So Letterboxd then, which is all user scores and is always 3.6. Can you guess what it is?
I'm debating. I think it's actually 3.8, but I'm going to say 4.
4.6.
Wow.
Yeah. That's pretty hectic.
Cool.
Good. I like what you're doing there, Letterboxd. Now, what we do is we do our rating system, which is very binary and very internet. So it's basically, is this better or worse than the most average movie that we know? Which, as for the most part I've ever seen, has been Aquaman 2018. Which, it's an obvious yes or no in this case, but like, why, DL? Why is it better than Aquaman 2018?
I mean, all the reasons previously stated. It's a good adaption.
It's a good movie.
Let's just say it's a good adaption.
Good movie. Good movie.
Did you vote Aquaman 2 as better than Aquaman 1?
No.
It was worse. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I believe. I mean, we'll come back. Check the tapes. I honestly can't remember. Matt, check the tapes. Let us know.
It is 100% worse. Yes! For
we
sure.
We agree.
It has to be.
Spoilers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, right. So I have one really burning fucking question for you, which made me a little... The only thing that put me off about this movie, really, in any significant way, was... When Paul drank the blue piss, whatever it was, and
the water
became,
of life.
Yes, the water of life.
The earth piss.
And
the worm piss.
Became omnipotent. He could see the future. He could see the past. Time became a flat circle, man.
Time
basically became Rust from True Detective. Right. If he can see the future and can see the past, he knows what's going to happen. And I get it. It's not all perfect. There are shattering timelines and he picks one. But if he can see them and he knows what's going to fucking happen, does that take all of the pretense and the any sort of interest out of it for you in any way? Because it did for me.
I think it didn't for me because I know a bit more about what, like they describe it more in the book.
Okay.
It's not that he can see, it's like, it's almost like statistics.
Sure.
It's like not guaranteed and he still has to do it. But he knows like what major choices to make. And when he makes a choice, like certain roads end and new one, and then it be like changes. It's not like it sees it all. He sees where it will, one will lead. And then what, once he gets there, he sees a bunch more pathways, but he doesn't know beyond those two steps what happens, if that makes sense.
So he couldn't see, it's like having half the map. This basically culminates in a one-on-one fight between Paul and Fade Rautha, which, you know, pretty cool, liked it a lot. But the way I perceived in this movie what happened to him was he became basically omnipotent. He could see the future that were happening.
You gave him too much. It's like he can see that if he takes this choice to storm Arrakis and he does it this way, it will end with a chance for him to have a coup with the Emperor,
sure,
where he will fight the Emperor's champion.
Okay.
And then he has to bet on himself to beat the Emperor's champion.
Okay,
like,
well, I
it's
mean,
not like he get like it's more descriptive in the book.
Well described in the film, because honestly, as soon as he took the blue piss, I was literally like, for me, it kind of sucked all the tension out of the film a little bit.
I understand why that happened.
Like he was unkillable at that point.
I understand.
And he acted that way.
He had mad plot armor, you mean?
Yeah.
Like I think that what they did well in the first one with the hallucinations was it showed you both sides of the hallucination, like both sides of what could happen.
Yeah.
Whereas it was already so long, they can't really add more of that.
the thing I liked about the first one was it really rammed that home, the fact that the hallucinations weren't going one way or another, because
super clear either.
Yeah. The guy who in the hallucinations was the one teaching him, it wasn't Charney, it was the guy who he murders at the end of the first film.
Yeah.
So he's the one who was his teacher in his hallucinations, and it's really interesting that whole story arc changed because of a choice that was made. That I found super interesting. I think if they'd have been a bit more prescriptive with that, I felt like it could have made it more tension soaked for me, because as soon as he drank it and I was like, yeah, all right, well
I think they needed to distract you with other like multiple paths that could have happened.
Yeah, right.
Where you don't know what path he's choosing.
Sure.
And you don't know what the outcome's gonna be. Like, so then you're still guessing. You know what I mean? You're not like as distracted by the fact that you think he just knows everything.
Yeah, because I mean, that's how I felt. I was like, and don't get me wrong, like take nothing away from this. Fantastic ending. Loved what happened. Just that fight scene where he had to take a blade to finish it off Fade Rautha. You know, it was cool. It was cinematic. It was great. But at the time I was literally like, oh, well, he's only going to do that because he knows that he can get whatever happens next, you know? But
I think the biggest thing for me was it just like didn't seem like a very poignant character choice. And it was like a missed opportunity to add like a temptation storyline. The drink is the temptation for him to take, because it's like an easier way out.
He's losing
he has to lose. He sacrifices a bit of his humanity and his relationships. And it's so like they didn't really, he kind of just, after they blow up the Sheik, he kind of just goes there and does it.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, okay, well, like that wasn't super, like everything prior
to this hardship for him.
Hey, I really don't want to. That's not the point. You're missing the point, Gurney. I don't want to do that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's like, I switch. So it's like, give me a conversation where there's a disagreement on that. Right?
I feel like they tried to showcase that with Charney's character being a bit like, oh, you know, like if you do this, you're not going to be the same. But he didn't, you're right. It didn't flesh that out.
There was
out
no
enough.
A decisive choice for him to do it.
You didn't really just see them losing the war. They just had like one hit and then he was like, fuck it. Gotta do it, guys. I'm out.
There was no like stake for why he did that.
Yeah.
Because he could have also gone and done that and pretended to be that guy. But I think the point was like they think they needed it.
Yes.
And they didn't. I think they missed there.
So they did effectively the Dune equivalent of, I don't know, using your phone to record someone saying something mean about someone else in the bathroom. And they basically cornered the Emperor, who was Christopher Walken. He was amazing. He was the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
And basically, because he was alive, Paul Atreides used that information that the Emperor had effectively sent their clan to die, to, you know, try and influence the lesser large but also great houses, and they basically capture the Emperor and a bunch of his subordinates, which I found really interesting. I like that idea.
No, I liked it a lot too. There's a couple changes there from the books. He doesn't kill. The other big reveal is that he's half Harkonnen and half Atreides. So like
his mum was the daughter of the big slug man?
Yes, which is part of the reason, and his mom didn't know that until she drank this stuff as well. And it's part of the reason why they didn't want her to crawl, like create a male, I think, because it's like they knew that it was a male of both Harkonnen and Atreides, but she just thought it was just a male.
Right.
And that added like more risk. They don't really talk about that in the show, but they do in the book. Another big change was Shawnee Shawnee leaves.
Yes, she does at the end.
Because he basically decides he needs to do, and this is in the book as well, to marry the emperor's daughter to like unite the realm as like a token marriage, even though he's in love with her and he's consistently says, I'll always love you no matter what I do.
Yeah.
But in this, she doesn't respond as well.
Well, for me, it was interesting because he kept saying, I will love you until my last breath or something. But because he kept using that exact phrase, whatever it was, I was like, oh, maybe he, like, that was the only part of me that was going like, oh, maybe he will die. Because he keeps using this phrase about effectively until I die or whatever, which I know in you know, the hindsight of it was, he was just trying to say like, I'm going to make this fucked up decision, but you got to know I still love you. I like that. It was kind of political, very Game of Thronesian in how it was sort of playing out. Like he had to make the hard decision, not marry the woman he loved. I kind of liked that. It was good. It was interesting.
I liked it too. And then the other, I guess, big thing that kind of leads us to like, where will it go?
Yeah.
Is the minor houses apparently deny his claim.
Yes. And he leaves it wide open for a sequel.
Yeah. Which, and like, even when they didn't deny his claim, there was a sequel, but it didn't feel as clean.
Okay.
Like, I was like, okay, well, what are they going to...
How are they building on
this? Because that's a change from the books. They don't deny his claim in the books.
Right.
So I'm like, what are they going to do? Just create this, like, nice paradise that he said he was going to create? You know?
I'm just thinking about this movie, right? Yeah. So
changed a lot.
But you said before that they arrive, they get defeated, and then they go to the desert. I think this movie is just the reverse of the first movie.
It is.
They start in the desert. Yeah. They go and they defeat the Harkonnens, and then they
it's
leave.
Literally
they leave to go to the start of the Holy War. It's two fucking backwards movies.
Yeah. Sometimes simple's good.
That's so fucking simple. I absolutely love that. Yeah, this movie was pretty great, to be honest with you. Had a great time with it. A few nitpicks at the end there, which, you know, you always have to have with these types of movies. I think the best art, is the art that makes you question it, makes you ask questions. And, you know, I want to know more about this. I want to know why, you know, Paul Atreides made the snap decision, but perhaps they'll explore it more in a sequel.
Perhaps they will. And we'll understand why anybody ever trusts a Ben Gesserit. Because literally, they just betrayed literally betrayed every single person in this movie.
Literally.
Except for Harkonnens.
That's interesting. Maybe they'll get... They were the richest ones, though.
Yeah,
all right. Shall we wrap up with a little bit of trivia true or false, my man?
We shall.
Nice. Okay. Trivia true or trivia false, DL? Stellan Skarsgård's body makeup took 8, that's the big slug man, took 8 hours to apply and 2 hours to remove every day after shooting. Is that true or is that false?
It is true.
It is true. He didn't drink anything and took Imodium pills in order to avoid having to go to the bathroom during days of shooting.
Well, he is old.
Yeah. Unreal. Yeah. I couldn't wait that long to go to the bathroom.
For sure.
I mean, I couldn't not drink water either. That would be ridiculous. Trivia true or false, DL? Shooting had to be stopped multiple times due to Adam Butler continually slipping into his Elvis accent, causing stars, including Josh Brolin, to lose their temper at the young actor. Is that true or is that false?
It feels so different. I think it's false.
It is false. I made that shit up.
It feels so different. Like, how do you go from that? Like, to like, it's like, baby, baby, baby.
wouldn't it be so funny?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good one.
Apparently, he had to see a voice coach to get rid of the Elvis accent because he still was doing it two years later.
Like, ladies.
See, we watched some interviews with him from the last like couple of years. He was still fucking doing that stupid accent.
Because he probably just loved it, dude. I mean, Austin Butler is getting a lot of like, him and Timothée are like, their rises are kind of meteoric right now.
They're going pretty well. Yeah. All right, couple more then. True or false, DL? Yeah. The music Gurney Halleck plays is actually from the soundtrack of the 1984 movie. No, when he's playing his little guitar thing in the ship.
Oh.
True or is it false?
I thought you were talking about like the, remember in the first one, they played bagpipes. It was pretty cool.
No.
That was one of the cooler parts of the movie.
When he plays guitar in this one.
No, yeah, that is funny. He was like, Spider-Man. This is like basically similar level of quality. I would say that has to be true because that movie is so bad and that song was not very good.
Ooh, it's not. It's actually reminiscent of the soundtrack of the MS-DOS Dune game from 1992. Now, that is a weird niche cut, but good for you guys. Like what we did there. So finally, this is the second film to feature Josh Brolin defeating Dave Bautista in hand-to-hand combat. Is that true or is that false?
Second film featuring Josh Brolin beating David Bautista in hand-to-hand combat. It, of course, is true because of...
Avengers Infinity War. Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, although it was like not live action. Hand to hand. Digital, well, yeah. But I give it to you. Yes.
Dave Bautista had a lot of fucking makeup on in both.
Yeah. He did.
Guys, look, ultimately, this was one of my favorite movies of the year. Thank God we got a good one.
Yes.
It's been a while.
It was worth the wait. Was this on my list?
I think this might have been
on my list. This is a winner.
Did you get a hit?
This is a hit.
Go back to your anticipated moves of the year. What did you have on there?
I'm pretty sure this is.
I think I left this one for you. You did have this one.
But I mean, it was like a guarantee.
I mean, it was a bit.
It was never going to be bad.
Yeah. Oh, you never know though. Like stuff like this, you can overhype. I overhype.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Exactly. So, guys, thank you very much for sticking with us. We really appreciate you. We love it when you stick around. You give us a 5-star review. It really helps with the show. DL, do you want to wrap up?
I do want to wrap. And a big thank you to Matthew Bliss for editing and mastering this week's episode.
He's a legend.
If you would like Matt to be a part of your podcasting team, get in touch with him at business@mbpod.com or head to mbpod.com to find out more about his services. It's wondrous, you know?
He's a huge part of our team.
It's awesome.
He is the team, effectively.
SWAT Cave of just... Wonders! It's that good. All right?
We just chat shit and he makes it sound like a real podcast. I'm baffled how he does it sometimes.
If you...
He's better than Christopher Walken on a good day.
Oh, wow. Bold Matt. That's high praise. Actually, if you want to hear...
No one's better than Christopher Walken on a good day.
His work, listen to From My Home to Yours, an expat and repat podcast where Matt and his wife share their experiences and advice for others moving to Ireland from Australia
or podcasting. It's beautiful to hear.
Anywhere.
Thank you very much for sticking with it, guys. DL?
It's been real. It's been fun.
Till next time.
It's been a worm's bum. Let's get after it, boys. Talio.
Talio, baby!